Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. In 1973, through a high school ministry called Campus Life in northern New Jersey, I became a Christian, and one of the first books I read was back then was by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Cost of Discipleship. And people asked me, Bob, how did you end up living a radical form of Christianity? And I answer, by reading the Bible and Bonhoeffer. Well, world-renowned Christian hero Dietrich Bonhoeffer was killed by the Germans in 1945 for his role in trying to assassinate Adolf Hitler. The most significant biography of Bonhoeffer to be written in the last 40 years was penned by the Friend of the Unborn Child, Friend of the Personhood Movement, New York City's Eric Metaxas. Eric, welcome back to Bob Enyart Live.
Thanks for having me, and what a wonderful introduction.
Wow, Bonhoeffer made such an impact in my life, Eric, and that was from the early days. I was a freshman in high school in 1973, became a believer, and a friend handed me The Cost of Discipleship, and since then, I've realized that Christianity is meant to be a radical change in somebody's life.
Well, that's the thing, and unless we're facing actual evil, we don't understand why we need Jesus Christ. We kind of think, well, you know, if I can be a little good person, and you know, but we're talking about dealing with evil. The Nazis, of course, made that radically clear, and that's why the story of Bonhoeffer, to me, it's the ultimate Christian story, because it shows you what doesn't work and what works when you're really dealing with evil. And when we're talking about the life issue or any of these things, these are not political issues. These are deeper spiritual issues. The political is one level,
right?
But these are spiritual issues. Bonhoeffer, to me, he's the model. He shows us how to take radical Christian faith and how to apply it in the real world. And I tell you, to be talking to you about this book, I never thought the book would ever come out. But the fact that it's out this week, it's the first major biography of Bonhoeffer in over 40 years, which is hard to believe, but it's absolutely true.
And Eric Metaxas, it's hard to believe because Bonhoeffer's struggle against evil, applying the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ to his day, is so applicable to the Christian living today, whether in America or anywhere around the world.
Well, you know it, and I know it, and this is why I guess I'm excited that the book is coming out, because we need to understand how do we negotiate the difficulties that we're facing. These are utterly important issues, and when we look to Bonhoeffer, he saw the handwriting on the wall with the Nazis many years before anybody else saw it. Let's face it, in 1933, no one could have dreamt of what was going to be happening 10 years in the future. Nobody could have. But Bonhoeffer, he saw it because he saw with the eyes of faith, and he was really a prophet. He understood where things were leading, and he also understood what he was dealing with in the Nazis. The Nazis were not just a little bit off. They were utterly diametrically opposed to the biblical worldview and to Jesus Christ. And I think that this is why this story, the story of Bonhoeffer, without trying to underscore the parallels, and because I try not to make it obvious, I just want to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
But the parallels,
they're just,
read this book,
yeah.
Let me tell you.
Yeah, they're just there. Bonhoeffer, with his vision, being, as you say, a prophet, he was able to see where Germany and Europe was headed.
Yep.
Reminds me also of Francis Schaeffer after World War II.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Looking at our culture with Darwinism, evolution, we're animals.
Right.
And the National Socialists, that's who the Nazis were, they were socialists.
Right.
So God's commands, do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, they were no longer absolutes. They were not relevant. Animals. We make it up as we go along.
That's right. And it's very rare, let's face it, it's very rare that we get to see things in clear black and white. The Nazis they took the social Darwinist worldview, which is the anti-biblical worldview, let's put it that way, they took it to the nth degree. They took it all the way. You rarely see that. Sometimes you'll just get a little, you'll disagree with somebody on this issue or that issue, but the Nazis disagreed in their fundamental core with the biblical worldview, with the gospel. Mm-hmm. And so in my book, I try to underscore that aspect of it to show this is what they were fighting against. And it's all through the book. It's just an amazing picture because you see that they were consistent. It's very rare that you get somebody who's consistent. The Nazis were consistent. They had a worldview which was the gospel of death. It was the exact opposite of the gospel of life, the gospel of Jesus. And they carried it through all the way to the end. We see how it starts, and we see how Bonhoeffer and the Confessing Church fight it, fight it, fight it. It's really, it's a story
that
for
phrase,
our time.
Eric Metaxas, that phrase, the Confessing Church, that's a Bonhoeffer phrase.
Yes, Bonhoeffer was one of the leaders in the so-called Confessing Church in the 30s. It's fascinating, really. And again, I try to spell this out in the book because most of us don't know this history, but I try to teach it in the book so that we can all be familiar with the history. But the Nazis, you know, they came in, they didn't announce everything, right? They didn't say where they were going. They started slow. But Bonhoeffer understood that they had ideas which were very quickly going to be directly opposed to the Christian, to the church. And he and some other leaders, Martin Niemöller and a few others, said that the state church, the German church, has to fight against this. We cannot allow the Nazis to co-opt the church. And eventually, they broke away, and they became the quote-unquote confessing church because it was about confessing Jesus Christ,
now,
not being ashamed to do that.
The way this should have happened, if churches, if Lutheran churches in Germany, if churches in America are truly committed to Jesus Christ in a biblical worldview, a man like Bonhoeffer would be raised up and warning the church, we have to resist the National Socialist. We have to oppose their hatred of the Jews. He should have been identified as a servant of God, a leader, and someone to be taken into counsel, and let's plan together our opposition to the National Socialists. But that's not what the church at large did with Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Is this true?
No, of course not. Well, we always know that there's always a church, and then there's always the real church, the remnant, the holy remnant, the people who really are following Jesus. There will always be people who are fooled. Obviously, in the Old Testament, you see that same example. They stoned the prophets, and we have Pharisees today who they see, but they don't see. They hear, but they don't hear. That's always the case, that some people, by the grace of God, have the ability to discern, and other people get fooled. And the Nazis fooled most of the German church. Because, again, we have to give the folks in the German church some credit and to make them, or at least to explain that they didn't know. They really were fooled. And when it happened, or when certain things happened, it was then too late. Now you're stuck. You've got Hitler and you've got the Nazis. But we could be fooled today, and that's why I think this is such an important story.
And I think we are being fooled today.
There's no question.
But how could a German Christian have been fooled? Let me give an example. In some districts in Germany, in the elections in 1933, there were majorities who voted for either the Marxist communist or the Nazis, the National Socialist. So if there was a Christian who was especially attuned to how evil international communism was, that it would ban Christianity, if they had any kind of foresight, it would enslave hundreds of millions or billions of people, perhaps murder tens of millions of people, a Christian might have thought, well, I'm going to vote for the Nazis.
Of course, that's what they did.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for the Nazis because at least it's not part of international communism.
That's the point. That's exactly the point. And this is how conservatives can get fooled. We have to be careful. Hitler played the conservatives. He basically said, I'll tell them, I'll use words, I'll say that, you know, we're on God's side, we want Christian morality, we're against decadence. Well, he said all the right things that made people say, hey, he's our guy, he's fighting against this decadence that's in Germany, in Weimar Germany. It's so decadent, so morally depraved. Well, of course it was. But Hitler was going to be depraved in another way. He was simply saying that, you know, I'm not going to fall off the tightrope, on the left side. I'll fall off the tightrope on the right side, but we're going to both go down into the same abyss. The communists and the Nazis ended up in the same dark totalitarian statist place, and many people were fooled. And that's why, as I say, this is a story for us today, because it's so easy to be deceived unless you really know Jesus Christ, unless you really know what the truth is. Substitutes for the truth, cheap substitutes, just, you know, sort of, I'm a churchgoer, I believe in good stuff or whatever, that will not carry you, that will not carry the day against true evil. The Nazis were truly evil, and as I say, this is it's just a story that, it was chilling to me when I was writing this story, Bob, because I said, you know, these are some very interesting parallels, and I hope that...
The parallels come through. Eric Metaxas, New York Times bestselling author, he wrote the book Amazing Grace, the story of how William Wilberforce was used by God in a heroic way to stop slavery in England. In fact, far beyond stopping slavery, he made it unthinkable, which is, you just have to read the book Amazing Grace by Eric Metaxas to realize how God used William Wilberforce in his courage in his battle for 40 years. But now the book is Bonhoeffer, and what a perfect sequel of sorts, Eric. It's not actually a sequel, but it's a sequel.
Well, it's one of these things, I can say this to you and to your radio audience, that I know without any question God led me to write this book. I don't say that lightly. I never would dare say such a thing lightly. I believe God led me to write this book. I believe that these are two heroes for the church today, Wilberforce and Bonhoeffer. And the Bonhoeffer story, by the way, this Friday, April 9th, is the 65th anniversary of the death of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He was martyred at the hands of the Nazis right before the end of the war, April 9th, 1945. And I thought, what a fitting time to launch this book, to have this book, which as I said, it's the first major biography of this huge figure in over 40 years. There simply hasn't been a major biography written on him since the first one, which was written by his best friend. It's like a reference work. Most people wouldn't read something as it's 1,100 right. pages. But there's also a lot of new information that I have in my book.
Well, just, and there's, Eric, there,
come out in the last 10 years.
There are extraordinary photographs, historical photographs, families. It's a beautiful, beautiful hard-covered book, Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Prophet, Martyr, Spy. And so with this book out now, my prayer is that, you know, people are reading things on their iPods. And this is the kind of book you take home and you curl up on a chair in family room and you enjoy it. For one, Eric, I just want to let you know, I know you know, your writing style is such a joy to read. I mean, virtually every paragraph, as somebody who loves to read my whole life, I enjoy every paragraph you write. And there is a story in here. After World War II ended, the thought in Europe was the only good German is a dead German. Mm. And the fact that there might be some good Germans who were in a resistance, Churchill couldn't care less. Europe couldn't care less. They hated the Germans. And, you know, it's somewhat understandable at the level in which you're trying to stop the war machine and that death machine that was the National Socialist.
Right.
But then there is a memorial service in England for a German who died just 3 months earlier, a couple months before the end of the war.
Right.
And it's startling that in England there'd be a memorial service for any German, and then it was carried by the BBC, and Bonhoeffer's parents living in Germany heard the live broadcast of their son's memorial, and that's how they found out that he had been martyred.
Exactly. It's unbelievable. Imagine this. Their son had been dead for 3 months, but because they were in Berlin, they couldn't get any word. We forget how broken communications. I mean, there was just no way to get information, even a letter, into Berlin. It was just so tough. So somebody told them that their son had died, and then somebody said he was alive. They didn't know what to think, and then somebody said, yeah, it's confirmed he's dead. Listen to the BBC tomorrow. They're having a memorial service. Mm. It's going to be at Holy Trinity Brompton Church in London. Some of your listeners will be familiar. It's an amazing church today, evangelical church in London. And 65 years ago, this memorial service was held. Bonhoeffer's old parents tuned into the radio to listen to the BBC broadcast. That's how they knew their son had died. It could bring tears to your eyes. I start my book with that, and I end my book with that. And I hope folks, people who are readers, will love this book just because there's so much. There's just so much history and stuff in there. And I say that as somebody who I learned as I was writing the book. I mean, it was a joy for me because I simply didn't know this stuff. I am a German. My mother's German. And of course, we are patriotic Americans, but all my life I have been thinking about the dark wound in the German national history, mm-hmm. the psyche that the Nazis created. And Bonhoeffer is a bright light. He's a beam of light in the darkness, that he followed Jesus Christ unto death with no fear, with the joy of following Jesus. And it's just one of those stories. I have to say, when I first heard it about 20 years ago, when I really came to faith, and I said, this is unbelievable. How come everybody doesn't know this story? And one thing I want to say, Bob, is that the theological liberals have hijacked the legacy of Bonhoeffer. He was as far from a theological liberal as you can imagine, but they've kind of hijacked his legacy. And in my book, I try to set that to rights, because using Bonhoeffer's own words, you can pretty quickly see where he's coming from.
Well,
and
Eric,
it's a privilege to do that.
Eric, you live in New York City. You go to church in New York City at an evangelical Bible-believing church.
Yeah.
Well, Bonhoeffer in 1930 said of the Union Theological Seminary in New York City, he said, at this liberal seminary, the students laugh at the fundamentalists, whereas it's the fundamentalists who know more of the truth and grace and mercy and judgment of God than these seminarians.
Well, here's the funny thing. You never hear this about Bonhoeffer. And that's why I said I've got to put this in my book, because people need to know where he was coming from. He came, imagine, in 1930 to study at Union, and he immediately understood, and he was very gracious, but he immediately understood that their theology is really subpar, and all they know is they don't want to be like the fundamentalists. But the fundamentalists know more about the Bible than the theological liberals do. So he started attending Abyssinian Baptist Church up in Harlem. And for the first time in his life, he saw, fire and brimstone Bible preaching, and it changed his life. He saw worship like he'd never seen in Germany. And you really can see that his life changed when he went back to Germany after that experience. It wasn't Union that did it. It was worshiping among people who knew Jesus. It completely changed his life. And as I say, what a privilege for me to tell this story. I'm so excited that the church is going to get to read about this hero. And I know that it's going to inspire the church. I have no question in this time, as we need to be inspired.
So, Eric Metaxas, we have just a few minutes left. How did the Lutheran church fare because they turned their back to the call of Scripture and also to the voice of Dietrich Bonhoeffer pleading with them, arguing, fighting with them to take a stand against the wickedness that was in their culture and their government? They rejected that call, that prophetic call.
Sure.
And so how did they fare, even today?
Well, you tell me. We know that the mainstream Protestant churches, none of them has fared at all well.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that they've been clinging and clinging and clinging, and it's all been slipping through their fingers.
The mainstream
Protestant churches are doing very poorly, unless it's the conservative branch of those churches.
Yeah.
But let's look at Germany today. Germany today is practically, it's a post-Christian, secular state.
Right. The church is dead in Germany. In fact, there are Christians in Germany who go to jail because they try to homeschool their children.
Yes.
The public schools in Germany, and this is what the Christians are so desperate about, the law forces them to send their children to the government schools, and in their health education classes to have sex education, they actually show them video pornography of people having sex.
Well, and again, that's the secular gospel. When you follow the secular gospel to its logical end, you end up in those places. It's pretty clear here in Manhattan and the United States, we're moving in that direction as well. And that's why if the church cannot be the church, if there's no salt and light, we know what happens to the meat. Mm. It rots. And I think that we're just at a place right now where this story speaks to us. I want to say to people, again, this is the 65th anniversary of Bonhoeffer's death this Friday, April 9th. The book officially launches. They can get it on Amazon, and please visit my website. If you can spell my name, it's ericmetaxas.com. But at my website, I've got all kinds of stuff, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. I really want to get the word out.
Let me spell that for the audience. The website is ericmetaxas.com, ericmetaxas, ericmetaxas.com. Eric, at Yad Vashem in Jerusalem, their Holocaust museum there,
yeah.
We've been there over the years repeatedly, and they have an Avenue of the Righteous.
Right.
And your book, Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, and Spy, this is a righteous Gentile who went to war against the Third Reich, so to speak.
Yes, Yad Vashem has officially denied Bonhoeffer's status as a quote-unquote righteous Gentile, but there are a number of Jews fighting to get his name instated. One of them is Stephen Wise. I'm going to be with him this Friday here in New York at the official launch of this book on the 65th anniversary of Bonhoeffer's death. I'm going to be with him, and I'm going to speak about Bonhoeffer. And this man, Stephen Wise, who I just mentioned, is the grandson of the rabbi that Bonhoeffer corresponded with in 1933 when he saw what the Nazis were doing. He corresponded with him. So the grandson of this rabbi, I have the privilege of meeting him, and the reason I say all this is because this grandson has been in the fight to get Bonhoeffer instated as officially a righteous Gentile at Yad Vashem. So this is just an exciting thing that's happening right now. I hope that they're going to open up the case. I know that Elie Wiesel has been involved in it. This is all very exciting.
Very exciting, very important. Hopefully people in our audience will pray, in fact, that that will happen. You wrote your last book on William Wilberforce. The great-grandson of William Wilberforce has endorsed Colorado's Personhood Amendment, which was quite a thrill to Keith Mason, co-founder of Personhood USA. Wilberforce's great-grandson, today a Christian, said, "This is what my great-grandfather would have done. He would have fought for the God-given right to life of the unborn child, not to regulate." As I think I got this right, Eric, later in his life, William Wilberforce urged Americans who were against slavery to stop regulating and fight for abolition.
Yeah, I think that they realized that regulation was not working. It's an interesting thing to see how we learned from our mistakes, but this is the Bonhoeffer story is similar in that Bonhoeffer early on, or maybe it's different in the sense that he could see from the beginning that you've got to take a stand against this evil boldly and early. And if you don't do that, it's the evil stays one step ahead. The evil was one step ahead of the church in the Nazi times. And that's one of the most fascinating things to me is that Bonhoeffer was always right there saying, we've got to take a stand now. We've got to drive a stake in the ground here. And they would say, oh, well, we need to talk, or we need to debate, or we need, you know, and the tide would keep rising, and he'd say, we've got to take our stand now. And eventually, he was practically all alone taking his stand. But it's there are so many stories from history that we can learn from. Wilberforce and Bonhoeffer, as I have said, and as I have proved by spending so much time writing these books, to me, these are stories that they speak to us right now. The Lord would use them to speak to us today.
Eric, Colorado Right to Life brought you out to this state to speak at the March for Life in 2009. You've been so busy with the launch of your book, Bonhoeffer, that you may not have noticed that the Secretary of State has certified the Personhood Amendment in Colorado to be on our ballot in November. So that was a great success.
Wow.
And also in Mississippi, 130,000 signatures were turned in there for their Personhood Amendment, and they have certified that that will be on the ballot, although that'll be in November 2011. Signatures are being collected by the hundreds of thousands in Florida, in California, and elsewhere. And so, Eric, your encouragement to the pro-life movement, the renewed Christian Bible-based pro-life movement in America, cannot be overstated. Thank you for your work and your faithfulness to the gospel and to history.
Praise the Lord. Thank you so much, Bob. What a joy to be a tiny, tiny part of what God is doing. Thanks for that update as well. Very exciting.
You're very welcome. So we'll like to keep in touch with you, Eric. Do you have any idea what your next, but will you have another book project?
I tell you the truth, this book is such a big book and took so much out of me that it'll be a while.
Okay.
I actually have two books out right now. My last book, which came out literally 2 months ago, it's called Everything You Always Want to Know About God, But We're Afraid to Ask, The Jesus Edition. If folks go to my website, they can see about that. That book is all, it's basically Q&A, fun apologetics on everything about Jesus, how we know he rose from the dead, how we know that he died and rose from the dead, and all of that stuff that every Christian really must know. You've got to know this stuff.
Mm.
And I put it into a book. It's the third in the series, Everything You Always Want to Know About God, But We're Afraid to Ask. And so I'm going to be spending a lot of time promoting that at the same time that I'm promoting the Bonhoeffer book, because the two of them pretty much came out at the same time. That was 2 months ago, and the Bonhoeffer book is coming out, as I said,
and
this
Eric,
Friday.
You get endorsements and rave reviews from every corner. How do you end up getting a fabulous review from Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York City?
That was a miracle. I've had many miracles in my life. This is a small one, but it actually happened. A friend of mine invited me here in Manhattan to a fundraiser for Bob McDonnell. You know who that is. He's the guy who's now the Virginia governor. Okay, so this is
right before
anybody thought McDonald could win. This is about a year and a half ago. There was a fundraiser for him here in New York City. My friend invited me, said, please come, and Giuliani should be there. I thought, well, that would be interesting. And I thought, I'll bring a copy of My Amazing Grace, because every time I meet a politician, I want to give him a copy of Amazing Grace.
Mm.
Well, I bring the book, and I show it to Giuliani, and he looks at it, and he says, oh, I read that book on Kindle. And I said, wait a second. You read my book on Kindle? I'm shocked to hear this. This is unbelievable. And then I guess he realized that I was the author, so he said, oh, he goes, it's fantastic. He goes, it's better than the movie.
All right.
And then
the movie was tremendous.
And that's the funny thing is that, you know, that's the greatest thing you could say, because the movie's a wonderful movie. But then he stood up in front of this whole crowd with no prompting. I didn't tell him to go do this. And he lifted up the book and said, this is a great book. You should buy it. It's better than the movie. And I said, well,
wow.
You know, I'm going to put that on my website, Mayor Giuliani.
Well, that is great. So, and last thing, could you tell us your church? Because Denver Bible Church, our young people at our church, they grow up to be godly men and women, heroes of the faith. And one looks like he's headed to New York City to attend King's College.
You're kidding me. I love King's College.
Yeah, King's College. I used to go to Nyack College when King's College was up north along the Hudson.
Yep. I've been very involved with King's College. Marvin Olasky, who's the new provost, is a friend. He comes to my Socrates in the City events. King's College is fantastic. And the beauty now for college students coming to New York City is that there are many good churches to attend here.
And yours, could you want to name yours?
I go to an evangelical Episcopal church called Calvary St. George's. There's also Times Square Church, which I go to.
All right, and Eric, we're out of time. May God bless you, Eric Metaxas.
Thanks so much.
KGov.com.